Today on Repair Radio, we'll be talking about Apple's new iPhones, scary-looking chains and sprockets, and about how Congress wants to read Tim Cook's emails? And also, we'll be answering some of your burning questions, so stick around.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Repair Radio, the official iFixit podcast. I'm Craig Lloyd, and as always, I'm joined alongside Kevin Purdy and Whitson Gordon. How you guys doing?
Hello.
I'm doing good.
So, what are you guys fixing this week? I think, Whitson, you were on vacation.
I was on vacation, and I actually fixed nothing on my vacation. I fixed my work-life balance on vacation. I took 3 days off, which I don't think I've done since I started freelancing. I literally was writing articles while my wife was in labor at the hospital. So, it was really nice to take a few days off and not have to do anything except like play with my kids. But I still have to do those two battery replacements, so that's coming one day.
So a little bit of self-help, a little bit of guilt.
Yep, basically. Par for the course. How about
Kevin?
You guys?
I bought a Raspberry Pi 4 just because it's like I had some pocket money, and computers are what you buy when you have money, if you're me. Or Whitson, I suppose. So I've just been setting it up and trying to get it like set up as like this multitasker on the network where when I'm traveling, I can SSH into it and, I don't know, run diffs on files. But also like be a VPN, kind of like a maybe like a Plex thing, kind of, although I already have an NVIDIA Shield, so I don't really need that. Maybe like a home network security thing. But the main thing is that I wanted it to kind of control media sharing, like music and pictures and stuff like that. And I had forgotten how much enjoyable, stupid fun it is to try to get a Linux machine on your home network.
You can just stop
the
sentence there.
Yeah,
I know
right.
How much fun it is to get a Linux machine to do anything.
To literally do anything. But especially if you've got a shared hard drive hooked up to your router, and it's, you know, it sees it as like a Samba Windows style file, and trying to get that permanently mounted and available to the Linux machine for like reading and writing.
You can't just use fstab?
Think about the sentence you just said. Just use fstab. Just open a text editor and use a weird tab delimited file with full of like lingo that nobody understands, zeros and ones that, okay, anyways, yeah.
Just use
fstab.
Back in my Linux days, if someone said a sentence like that to me, I'd just be like, get out of my face. And after setting up Arch Linux one time, I now understand how all of that works, and it's just like amazing to be free of the like gut-wrenching, crippling, like, self-doubt of, like, I'll never figure out how to do this. But it is, like, yeah, it is a pain.
I just like the idea that your neighbor's like, sure is hot today, and you're like, why don't you just build a pool? you know how concrete works. Get a shovel.
It's funny, I'm actually doing a bunch of Raspberry Pi projects right now, because PC Mag has me doing a bunch of Raspberry Pi guides, so I'll be there alongside
really
with
fun.
You in spirit. So you have the 4?
I have the 4 with 4 megs of RAM, or 4 gigs of RAM.
It's good, but it is toasty.
Yeah, it came with a little plastic case, and I took the top
case
off of it.
The official Raspberry Pi plastic case just makes it so much hotter.
Is it white and red?
Yeah, you can't use it.
I took the top off of it. I was like, this is the closest thing I'll ever have to a hot rod.
Seriously.
I have to cut vents into it, or else it'll die.
Supposedly, and I haven't used this one myself yet, and I think it's either out or out for pre-order, but have you heard of the Flirk case, FLIRC?
No, I have not.
So the Flirk originally started as an infrared, tiny little USB infrared receiver for things like the Raspberry Pi running Plex or Kodi, and that's actually a really great product. They also now make a Raspberry Pi case that is like an aluminum case with like a little built-in heat sink that goes on the CPU, so it like is supposed to be much better at distributing heat. The whole case is basically its own heat sink, as opposed to the official Raspberry Pi case, which is just this plastic hot box.
So I bought the kit version that has 4 individual heat sinks to go on the memory.
Yeah, aren't as good as like the actual Flirt case, which is like a whole aluminum thing. But
will the Flirt case now fit my Raspberry Pi since I've stuck these heat sinks onto it?
That is no. You would have to remove the heat sink on the CPU. The other ones are probably fine. Because I think the Flurk only has, I have to double check, but I think it only has like a big metal piece coming down for the CEU.
Well, the good news is I've got my What Are You Fixing set for next podcast.
Again, I haven't tried it, but I'd be very curious to hear how it works for you.
I'm interested. I'll just say that. So that's pretty much what I've been working on, is getting a Raspberry Pi to not burn my house down.
I'm still very much a Raspberry Pi noob. So I set up a Raspberry Pi in the office, like a month or so ago. And it was my first time doing anything with a Raspberry Pi. Like, I've never used one before. So I got Kevin's help. And, I plugged it in, booted it up, and it booted right to the desktop. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's a computer. It's like this $35 computer. The possibilities are endless.
It's amazing.
It is really cool.
Yeah. It's the closest thing to like what I feel like people, like a computer magazine would have written about in the late 80s. Like, well, someday we'll have little computers that fit in our pockets. Like, yep, we're there now.
Yeah.
Like, literally full desktops that can do 1080p video are just like available for the price of a meal at Chipotle.
1080p, hey, the Raspberry Pi 4 can do 4K.
How much money are you spending at Chipotle, Kevin?
Well, two people, and then, you know, chips and drinks.
Guess
you got to get the large chips and guac too. That's the real secret. The large chips and the large guac.
I feel like for two people, I've only ever spent maybe like $20-$25.
That's very economical.
But like, I actually don't remember,
because we get you know, two burritos, whatever, and then drinks and chip.
Drinks. I mean, that's a rookie mistake right there.
I don't have dinner plans, so maybe I'll go out and buy Raspberry Pi's worth of Chipotle tonight just to, like, prove you wrong, / have a lot of indigestion.
Well, and this is the other thing about the Raspberry Pi is, like, yes, it's $35, but you need an SD card, a case, kind of, a power supply. The power supply is annoying because a lot of people for a long time thought, like, oh, I'll just use this micro USB cable and old phone charger I have lying around.
No, that just does
not work well. The phone chargers don't, even if they say that they're the same voltage and amperage, they don't always send it consistently enough to the Pi. And you really need a power supply designed for the Raspberry Pi to avoid crashes and stuff like that. So you end up spending much more than $35 on a full Pi setup.
Annoyingly, the Raspberry Pi will still boot with low power, but if you like look at the boot up text while it's like grinding up its Linux installation, it'll actually like have a little line that's like, "I'm running, but I'm underpowered."
Mine would just crash all the time and then corrupt the SD card, and it took me like months to figure out why my thing was such a piece of crap. And it turned out I was using a piece of crap phone charger.
Yeah,
this was years ago, but yeah, good tip.
Okay, there you go. That's what I'm working on.
Cool.
What else, Kevin?
No. Did I talk about the angle grinder I need to buy next week? Last week? Last time we were on?
Yeah.
All right,
I'm curious about this.
I am too. I'll let you know. I haven't bought it yet because I've been traveling too much, but I'm going to buy that thing.
Yes, do it.
Yeah. Battery-powered angle grinder. So now I just seem like a bike thief. Super excited.
Angle grinders are like the do-all tool. I know, like, in your head they're like, oh, they're for stealing bikes, but like you can do anything with an angle grinder
and a mask to shield yourself from the sparks.
Well,
Craig, what are you working on?
So I finally finished all the big maintenance items on my motorcycle that I bought a couple weeks ago, and I'm very happy with it now. So I think last time I mentioned I did oil change, brake fluid, coolant, new hand grips. I installed new turn signals finally, so people know which way I'm turning, which
because is important. The previous owner did not believe in them.
But since then I changed the spark plugs and the air filter, ended up needing new tires. Motorcycle tires are expensive. Like, compared to cars, like for cars, you could probably get a set of new tires for $350-$400 probably, and then get them, you know, mounted for, I don't know, $50-$70 probably.
Something like that.
For motorcycle tires, for a pair, it's like $300-$350. And then,
oh, which seems like less, but of course you realize in your head, like, oh, it's only two.
Yeah, like per, on a per tire basis.
Gotcha.
And then, like, to get them mounted, it's about the same cost as for a car. But if you bring in the whole motorcycle, like a lot of people take the wheels off and bring just the wheels into to their shop, and it's a lot cheaper that way. But if you bring in the whole bike, it's obviously more. It's like $80 to $100. So yeah, it's a lot more expensive. Tires are way more expensive on a motorcycle, and they don't last as long. They last like high mileage tires for on a motorcycle, maybe 10,000-12,000 miles.
Oh jeez.
Yeah, which on a car, you know, 50,000-60,000 miles probably.
Because there's only two tires to take the weight, because motorcycle drivers are instinctively bad motorists who constantly tear out all the time in my neighborhood while I'm trying to sleep.
I think even with the high mileage tires, it's obviously a harder compound, but it's still much softer than a car tire.
Because traction is so much more important, so they have to make them softer, or?
Yeah, so even...
I mean, not that traction isn't important when you're driving your kids around or something, but I just don't know. I don't know the first thing about motorcycle tires.
Yeah, it's compared to a car tire, it's even the harder compounds are still softer than a car tire. They don't last as long.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the lesson is the softer the tire, the shorter lifespan it has, but the more grip you get. I also had to get a new front and rear sprocket and a new chain. I took off the cover for the front sprocket, and I noticed that it was the teeth were hooking, or shark finning, as they say. So instead of, you know, the teeth being, you know, perfectly symmetrical, they start to like sort of curve.
And Kevin, they start to look like a weapon in a Dark Souls game.
Yeah, they start to look like a throwing star.
Yeah,
it's pretty baller.
It's cool, except for how it makes you die.
Yeah,
just like a throwing star.
Well, but more indirectly.
Kevin, have you? So I'm not sure for bicycles if that's a thing.
Oh, buddy, it's a thing. It is a super thing. So I've never. I'm learning so much about motorcycles. They're just like big aggro bikes. So the mostly this happens on the chain ring, which is the big wheel, I guess you'd call it. You know, like the big sprocket on the front where your pedals are. And usually, if someone has just been riding a beater bike forever, or even a good bike, and just never thought to check the chain or check the rear cogs or the front chain ring, just over time as the chain starts to wear out, it stops making such a nice tight connection with all the teeth, and as it slips around, it basically sharpens each one of the little teeth on the sprocket into, like you were describing, like a super cool, like awesome Danzig album cover weapon, which is cool, but like, you know, that's bad traction. It's bad for the chain to like have to hook around to get onto the sprocket. And then when you're on a bike, I mean, I guess you've got a guard on your sprocket, you were just saying, right?
It's like an entire cover. Like you can't, with the cover on, you can't even see the front sprocket at all.
Ah, okay. Well, on a bike, if you don't have like a cover around your chain ring or whatever, now you've got this just like super sharp implement that is right next to like the backs of your thighs.
Yeah.
And or your jeans that get caught in there. So, so basically it's like the rule of bike maintenance, or one of them, is that every time you start to think your chain is starting to go, or you think that like your cogs are looking a little toothy, you should probably change out the chain as well, because once one goes, it kind of starts to go to wear the other one. Though on a bike, like a rear freewheel or a rear cassette is pretty cheap. On a bike, I assume they're a little bit more expensive. A motorcycle, they're more expensive.
Actually, sprockets, we call them sprockets in the motorcycle community.
It's a cooler word.
Motorcycle sprockets are actually surprisingly fairly cheap. I think a front sprocket you can get for like $20, and then a rear one is $40 to $50. And we're talking like decent quality, like not the cheap stuff. The chain is where it gets really expensive. A motorcycle chain Yeah, you're probably looking at around $100.
But it kind of should be.
Yeah.
It should not be cheap.
Right. And like you said with bicycles, same with motorcycles, you should change. If you're going to change the chain or the sprockets, you need to change both at once.
Mm-hmm. Woo. So are you done? Are you ready to ride this thing, or is it still like scary to think of what the other guy didn't do?
Oh no, it's as far as all the things that I wanted to do, I've done all of the big maintenance stuff, and I mean I rode it to work this morning. I'm happy with it now. I feel like whenever I buy, I don't know, have you ever like bought something like Kevin? You bought a used bicycle before?
Oh, yes.
And it's like
all my bikes are used,
and it's not like when you buy it, it's not like how do I? It's you have to make it yours, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, like I mean, that's like the fun part is that like you bought, and this sounds like mean, but like you bought that person's refusal to. change the chain, like you're arbitraging. That's a hard word to verbalize. You're getting the benefit of their deciding that, like, you know what, I'm done doing oil changes on this thing. Like I am done with with cogs and chains and brake fluid and coolant. Like you're getting the benefit of that because like you still have the energy and the enthusiasm to do it. So yeah, like it's not yours until you do something to it either. Yeah, I feel that.
Yeah. But yeah, like I'm at the point now where it just feels so good to finally have it at a point where like I'm completely happy with it and it has fresh fluids in it. So it's just like, I don't know, like that newness feeling, like it feels like a brand new motorcycle now. And it's a good feeling.
So would you say that you fixed it?
Yeah. The only thing I took it to the shop for was the tires, to get tires on it.
Oh, I was just trying to make a bad pun about our site name. Like, doesn't my wife? Okay, sorry guys. Like, my wife does that to me all the time. Like, she'll be like, "Oh, did you fix it?"
and then he had to reply, "I fixed it."
Right. I mean, like, yeah. I mean, usually she's just mocking me like a little bit, but that's how marriage is, guys. Let's fix my marriage next.
Outside the scope of this podcast.
I think that's. From our agenda, that's the next episode, I believe.
Yeah, we'll do a teardown next week of my marriage.
Teardown Kevin's marriage.
We'll start from the beginning. All right, first you need a suction cup.
I wrote a post titled, "What to Do If Your iPhone's Home Button Stops Working." And I added a little announcement, but we started selling iPhone 7 and iPhone 8 home buttons.
And I assume they still carry the same caveat that Touch ID won't work if you replace it yourself.
Yes.
But they're a heck of a lot cheaper than getting it replaced from Apple with Touch ID, right?
Oh, yeah. I think the iPhone 8, if your iPhone 8 home button stopped working and you took it into Apple, on their website, under or other repairs, it's like $400.
Yowza. Yeah.
It's into this giant bucket where anything that's not under warranty or Apple Care is just like anything where they have to open up and go inside is generally like $300+.
Yeah, a couple hundred dollars at least. But our home, the iPhone 7 and 8 home buttons that we just started selling are $20.
Wow. Okay. So yeah, that makes sense. I mean, if you're like, you know, obviously Touch ID is like one of the most useful things to ever come to phones. And I wouldn't want to live a long time without it. But if it's like a phone that you're like just kind of hanging on to it for a little while longer and don't want to like pour a bunch of money into before you upgrade, I could see that being useful and just like living with a passcode for a little while. I'd much rather pay $20.
Yeah. And for those asking why we just started selling home buttons for the 7 and 8, it's because it uses a different mechanism for the – it's not a clicky – it's not the traditional.
This is a touch sensor
home button. Yeah,
it vibrates when you press down on it.
Yeah, so
it's really well done though. Like it really feels like a click.
I don't think it does.
I feel like it feels like you're clicking the whole bottom of the phone, even though you're not. It really threw me off for a while. And when the phone's off and I press on it, it like I get this really weird sense of like, wait, why isn't my thing clicking?
I don't think it feels like an actual button click. The MacBook Pro, now the Force Touch on MacBook Pro, that feels like a button click.
Oh, I've heard good things about that. I actually haven't used that myself.
It's uncanny.
Yeah?
It's insane. But on the iPhone, I don't know. It just doesn't feel like I don't get that button feel.
I don't think on the iPhone it's supposed to be a button click. I just think you're supposed to get the same like feedback feel of like, I have enacted this thing. I now see the home screen.
But it's so much more localized than like, you know, when you like touch the fingerprint sensor on an Android phone, for example. Mm-hmm. It just kind of
the whole
like,
thing just kind of buzzes.
It just kind of has this like little vibrate. And some phones are better than others. But like,
well,
I mean, we've written a post about this, but Apple just like dominates the haptic feedback game. The localization of that feedback when you press on the home button is so specific and targeted. It's very, very cool.
Well, folks, if you want to see how much space Apple devotes to the Taptic Engine, you can look inside Taylor Dixon's awesome post in iFixit, where he breaks down all the advances that Apple has made in haptic feedback versus, like, you know, generic Android phone A and B, which have, like, this tiny little fingerprint size thing that just shakes the whole phone. Anyways, it's super cool. Apple is really working on it.
We'll put that in the show notes.
Nice. Jinx.
All right, moving on. I think Apple like announced something.
I think it was like a new maybe some new Apple Watch bands or something, I don't know.
Motorcycle chains.
Motorcycle. iPhone 11. I'm sure we'll have more to talk about when we actually tear these things down. And I don't want to like spend the whole podcast talking about the thing that everyone else's podcast is talking about at the moment. But I think it looks pretty cool. I feel like a lot of people said that this keynote was boring, but I don't know. I liked that it was slightly iterative in a lot of the right ways. They even added a little bit of thickness for extra battery life. That's like, why aren't we all doing backflips? Like, that's amazing. That's a good thing.
Because nobody believes it.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Nobody believes that there's 4 to 5 hours worth of battery life more in this phone than there was
millimeter.
Previously.
Like, yep.
Nobody believes it.
I would. So you know what the most interesting part of all this to me is? And this isn't really iFixit related, but I really like that as opposed to last time where the iPhone XS and XS Max were kind of like the normal iPhones, and the XR was like the budget iPhone. They kind of flipped that around this time. So the iPhone 11 is kind of branded as like the iPhone 11. That's like the lower end version. And the other ones were branded as Pro. And I think that's like, it's a subtle, but I think it's an important distinction in that like not everyone needs this $1,000 phone. This iPhone 11 is the phone for everybody. And these other ones are the phones for people who want to just like spend an exorbitant amount of money on the best phone possible.
Yeah, well,
for pros.
I feel like a lot of people avoided probably the XR for that reason.
Yeah, but like I think the market showed them that more people are willing to buy the XR than they are to invest in the XS or the XS Max.
Maybe. I guess maybe this is just anecdotal. I don't know anyone with the XR.
That does feel very anecdotal.
It is extremely anecdotal.
I know plenty of people with XRs.
I think the XR is a good phone.
So those are some phones. Then the iPad was almost like a non, like it was just like essentially a spec bump / screen size change. And then, the Apple Watch, which we will be tearing down eventually.
It's always on display.
Yes.
Yes. We'll have a lot more to say about the display on the site very soon, I promise you.
But we also already had more stuff to say about Apple because on Friday, it came out that, Congress, the House Judiciary Committee, has requested the communications from many tech executives at Amazon, Facebook, Apple, and Google. They're investigating antitrust or anti-competitive behavior among all these tech companies. Things like how much Apple is charging developers to take a cut of their apps in the App Store, how they don't allow apps like Netflix to say, go to our site and sign up because they want their 30% cut of every Netflix subscription. A lot of stuff like that. But there were a few things that stood out specifically to us in their letter to Apple executives. And that was they want to know about Apple's restrictions on third-party repairs, Apple's whole battery gate situation, their decision to offer iPhone battery replacements cheaply, and how that affected their sales, presumably in an effort to have some sort of opinion on planned obsolescence. The new independent repair provider program, and Apple's kind of sweetheart deal with Amazon, where they're helping block a bunch of third-party refurbishers selling MacBooks and stuff that Apple doesn't want out there on the marketplace. So it's really, really interesting to see the government finally going after Apple for a lot of the stuff that we've been railing about for years. And I don't know if anything is going to actually come of it, but it was pretty surprising to see those things in a document that was largely software related.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pessimistic. I don't want to be pessimistic, but I'm pessimistic.
I'm pessimistic, but to me, this is at least a symbol of, like, at least someone's acknowledging that it's happening. Yeah. And I don't know if really anything is going to come of it, but, like, man, that is the first step, and we've just been trying to get everyone to acknowledge it for so long. And the government acknowledging it in particular is, like, a big step.
Yeah.
It may not go further, but...
It's slightly more promising in that if we remember the Zuckerberg in front of Congress testimony, which was embarrassing for everybody. Yeah, like watching your uncle skateboard is embarrassing. even someone who's kind of with it and very just glued into tech, like trying to understand the facets of Facebook and have a congressional hearing about it is very hard to do. Like it's very hard to understand the huge monster that is Facebook and like how it actually works and makes money and operates. But like things like you were saying, what's in like demanding that Netflix or any other app like never offer a different kind of sales funnel. Like I feel like that's something you can just ask a person about and get an answer or a non-answer, which is the most likely case. But you know, like that's these things like, why did you force Amazon to take down refurbished MacBooks? Like real question that someone's going to have to answer.
Well, and they're not just asking the questions. That's the thing, right? Is they could ask Apple a question and Apple would respond with a totally BS answer, like they all do. Mm-hmm. They want emails. They want Tim Cook's email inbox to see what actually led to this decision in terms of internal communications and not some BS PR response.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully, yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, in theory. Anyway, so that was an interesting story, and I'm curious to see what, if anything, comes of it. But at least it's one more step toward us all having the same conversation and not just us sounding like tinfoil hat people in the background, right? Like, you know, part of the battle is getting everyone to acknowledge that this is happening before we can do something about it.
So the Fairphone 3 is the latest very fixable, intentionally fixable, upgradable phone from the Fairphone company. This is the third iteration. They've done a lot of work to make this phone even more, not only repairable in that it's like, I think, I can never remember the exact number, but it's like essentially six modules. The camera is a module you could just replace if it failed. The battery and the screen are super easy to replace. The whole thing comes apart without any special screws. It actually, they don't include any of the, which I'm a huge fan of, the USB cables or charging warts or anything else or headphones in the case, because they assume that you, like us, have 35 of them already sitting around your house from every device you've ever purchased. Or you're also like us and you just buy the good ones from Anchor on, you know, wherever. But so it's a very repairable phone. It's meant to have its screen replaced, its battery replaced. So I was saying that it doesn't ship with any of that stuff, but it does ship with the screwdriver that lets you fix the whole thing. Well, at least fix all the modules that you can put in and replace. So our European team did a great job of tearing down the phone, although that is to say, you know, it's like making pancakes from a mix. There's only
sick burn on the European team. Ooh,
yeah,
wow.
No, I mean it's a good, like it's a good thing if
Kevin's getting kicked out of that Slack channel.
Oh jeez. If the world was a better place, we wouldn't have to rant about refurbished MacBooks. And
if the world was a better place, pancake mixes would be just as good as the real thing.
I don't know if I've ever agreed with Whitson more on a statement he was making as a joke. I have a lot of thoughts about pancake mixing.
I found some good pancake mixes in my day.
Okay, so the Fairphone 3 teardown, you can just check out how cool this phone is and how it is actually very easy to take apart. No heat required, no cool soldering gun tricks or anything. yeah, so check that out. It's on iFixit.com, right on the front page as of right now. But you can also search for it.
Cool beans. Sweet. Should we answer some questions?
Let's answer some questions. So, our first question, we get this question a lot, and we're always happy to answer it. So, top_deck, he wants to know, doesn't fixing your phone void your warranty?
No,
it does not. Yeah, no and yes. That's a good answer. So, under the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act of 1975, just fixing your phone yourself or replacing something in your phone yourself.
Or laptop or anything, really.
Yeah, phone, i.e. any device. Doing that, it won't void the warranty.
Or rather, companies are not allowed to void your warranty.
Yes.
On that.
Now, the only way they could void your warranty is if the manufacturer can somehow prove that your DIY repair was the cause of
whatever issue you're having.
Whatever issue, yeah.
Like if you replace the screen yourself and the screen stops working, you can't go into Apple and be like, hey, my screen broke. You need to fix it for free.
Right.
Like, well, you did that. There's clearly peanut butter on the other side of the screen, and we're not going to fix this for free. So I guess I would that's how I would phrase it. It's like companies aren't really allowed to void your warranty unless you specifically broke it.
Yeah,
but
or
companies or if, still do or say yeah. they do, and you could challenge them in court, but no one's going
to
do that.
But yeah, if you were to replace the screen on your phone or whatever and you were tightening down a screw and you punctured something like the microphone module, the microphone stopped working, you couldn't take it in to the manufacturer and be like, hey, my mic stopped working, replace it for free. Because your DIY repair was the cause of that malfunction.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
But the problem is that many of these companies will still tell you that repairing yourself voids the warranty, and you don't have a lot of recourse unless you want to, like, pay a bunch of money for a lawyer and sue them, right?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of these devices still have those stickers over the screw that says, if you break this sticker, your warranty is void, even though those are technically not legal. And the FTC finally started cracking down on that last year, and which is nice, I think. So I think, like, they were getting on, like, Microsoft's case about having it on the Xbox and a few other manufacturers, but there are still a lot of companies that use them. Last we checked, I think, like, Samsung still uses it on some of their hard drives, and MSI uses it on their laptops, and, you know, still a lot of these kinds of stickers and this misleading information out there. So, like, we yeah. really like to rail against the fact that iFixit, that this does not void your warranty, but under the law, but getting companies to fix your stuff if you've done an independent repair can still be a challenge.
Yeah.
But if a company tells you they won't fix your thing because you voided the warranty, argue with them. Definitely tell them that that is against the law and not true and that they need to fix it.
All right. Ethan Cooper, 0704, asks, does the iPhone 11 Pro have reverse wireless charging for the Apple Watch and AirPods? And by that, they mean a little bit of explication. Can you charge the Apple Watch and AirPods from an iPhone 11 Pro?
Like by putting them on the back of your phone?
Yep.
Like a la the Samsung Galaxy?
S10.
Well, does it?
Yeah.
Does it?
The S10?
You can
No, I'm sorry. The 11 Pro.
Does the iPhone 11 Pro have that?
Oh. Right. But I meant like wits in when he said a la the
The Galaxy S10 has it, but there were like rumors that the iPhone Pro 11 Pro would have it or whatever. There are even rumors that it may be built in but not enabled in software or something to that effect. Is that right?
Like they might be waiting for certification on it or something like that.
Yeah, but we don't know yet.
Apple didn't announce it, and it's not a feature of the phone, but the tech might be there.
I feel like Apple still would have announced it if the tech were in there, right?
No.
Like, they've done that before, although maybe that's why they're not doing it this time, because last time they announced AirPower, and then that never happened.
It had some, there, I thought I read somewhere, and maybe I read the wrong thing, but like I thought that on the Apple Watch, one of them, there was a infrared blood pressure sensor, some kind of optical device that allowed the Apple Watch to measure a certain thing, but they were waiting for approval from the FTC to use the technology. But they made the decision to just build it into the device, and then eventually they'd get the you know, the go-ahead, and then they could just enable it software-wise. So, like, I thought that maybe this is not a completely new thing for Apple, but we'll have to see.
Next question. Zexelton, he asked, have you guys ever broken any device while trying to make a repair guide? I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but we absolutely have.
I mean, some devices require you to literally break them in order to get into them.
Yes.
The AirPods. Like
AirPods, the HomePod.
The Surface laptop.
Yeah.
The Pixel Book.
But even devices that you don't have to break to get into, you know.
Did we ever fix that Switch that we broke? We were talking about this last episode, I think.
I have not heard
of... The Switch wouldn't turn back on.
Yeah. I haven't gotten an update about that yet.
So, potentially we broke a Switch?
I mean, I'm still on the side of we may not have, and it just came bricked out of the box. Because we didn't turn it on first.
Right. We may never truly know.
Well, it says specifically during a repair guide. We are generally talking about teardowns, where like that's our first entrance into the device. We don't, you know, we're actually trying to find a way in and see what is holding the thing together. And so sometimes you kind of like, oh, it turns out this very large screen is very fragile right here.
Yeah.
So let's. I, the smart money is that on teardowns, like first entry into the device, like almost certainly. There are some devices we've injured. But on the repair guides, which are kind of like a follow-on, where based on the teardown, we can now see that, like, oh, you can get to the LCD here, and, like, this is the part where you need to poke. You know, and this is the, you know, on most iPads, it's like, this is the part where you really shouldn't jam that thing in very far. yeah, so, like, in some ways, the repair guides that follow on from teardowns are a result of figuring out the ways to break the device during the teardown. So... yeah, it is definitely just part of the process.
I definitely broke my Chromebook when I was doing the repair guides. Not the like official iFixit, but like my own repair guides for iFixit. Definitely broke the screen. Had to buy a new one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We discover how fragile these OLED screens are, so you don't have to.
Yeah.
Well, and also, I mean, accidents happen. So even if, you know, even if we know how to get into a vice, I mean, I'm sure there's been a time where we've had a tech writer, you know, opening up the device for the 10th time, but, you know, something slipped and he broke something.
Yep.
It happens.
Yep. It's part of the process.
All right. Last question. Armin.S18 asked, will there be fix kits for the iPhone 11? Not right away, but absolutely, definitely in the future. I think with the 10S, we just started offering screen and battery fix kits. And that would have been like 11 months after its release.
Yeah, we only have so much information on these devices before they come out. So now that they're out, we need to start. I'm sure they're starting the process of finding suppliers for screens and things
right,
like that.
Yeah.
And we got to go now, like, find parts.
Yeah, so based on the timeline of the 10S, then iPhone 11 fix kits you can probably expect, you know, later next year at some point.
But we'll hopefully have parts before. When did we get like iPhone 10S batteries? Just like not the fix kit, but just the part. You know, like that happens a little bit before fix kits come out, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I guess we did offer the batteries a bit sooner than we did.
Yeah,
the
but still, kits. It's not going to be like next month, probably. You know,
right?
We gotta go out and talk to suppliers and find stuff.
Yeah, the iPhone 11 will you know, obviously it'll still be under warranty for the first year.
That's true.
So if your iPhone 11 breaks within, you know, the first month or so, it'll be under warranty.
Unless you dropped it and didn't get Apple Care Plus.
That is true.
So
that's it for today. And if you want to have us answer one of your questions, remember that you can email it to repairradio@ifixit.com. You can hit us on Twitter or Instagram. Our username is ifixit on both those places. and hashtag repair radio in your tweet too, and we'll see about it. I just got one on Twitter that's too late for today's show, but I'm excited for next week.
All right, well, that does it for this episode of Repair Radio. If you enjoyed what you heard, feel free to leave a review on iTunes. That would help us out a lot. And feel free to follow us on Twitter. Whitson, Kevin, what are your usernames?
I am Whitson Gordon. It's hard to spell, but if you spell it wrong, it'll probably come up.
I am Kevin Purdy, P-U-R-D-Y.
And I'm Craig E. Lloyd on Twitter and Instagram. And, of course, you can follow iFixit on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Username is iFixit. We will see you next time for another episode of Repair Radio. So long.